Good evening, everyone. And we'll be speaking this week about a topic that many women had asked that we should speak about, and that is what exactly is the obligation of davening for women? Is there a difference between Shabbos and weekday? And what order of importance should be given to the various different parts of tefillah? And how, you know, should we choose what to daven given the amount of time that we can possibly daven in? So let's break this up into three parts. First, we'll discuss what is the obligation for women to daven. Then we'll discuss the order of importance of the various different parts of davening according to what it says in the Paiskim, how you should choose what to daven given the amount of time you have. And lastly, we'll discuss Shabbos and Yantar. So the first thing that we need to know is that the Gemara says that women are obligated to daven. And that's the Gemara. The Gemara says women have to daven because tefillah is rachami. Tefillah is rachmanis. You're asking for Hashem to have mercy. And that applies to women as well, just as well as men, and therefore women are obligated to daven. So the question is, what sort of tefillah, though, is the Gemara referring to? Is it referring to davening three times a day or two times a day, Shacharis and Mincha? Is that what the Gemara is referring to? Psuka de Zimra, Shema, the works? Or is the Gemara referring to something else? And this is a Machlokes Rishonim. The Rambam's opinion is that everybody is obligated to daven min ha-Torah. You have a chiyuv to daven, and it's learned out of a pasuk in the Torah. And that chiyuv, though, has no particular limitation of time. And with one tefillah a day, one bakasha a day, a person is yotze his chiyuv. He does his obligation. So that is something women are equally as obligated as men because it's not time constricted. It's not bound by time. Women aren't obligated in anything which is dependent on time, but this, you can do it any time during the day, so therefore women are just as obligated as men. And the Rambam understands that that's what the Gemara means. And the Gemara says that women are obligated to daven. It means one tefillah a day. Now, even this one tefillah a day, which is certainly something that everybody should do, what exactly is that comprised of? What is necessary to do this one tefillah a day? Is saying Moed Ani in the morning enough? Is saying Asher Yatzar enough? So it's not really 100% clear. Shlomo Zalman Arbach of Zatzal would say that you should try to do three things. You should try to do a Shevach, praise of Hashem, a Bakasha, asking something from Hashem, and a haidah to thank Hashem for something. Three things: shevach, bakasha, and haidah. So therefore, he said the best is to say the berachas hashachar, the brachas we say in the morning, because that has all the aspects. Why? Because the brachas are comprised of a shevach and a haidah. We say, Baruch Ata Hashem, Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, that's a shevach. And haidah is the fact that we're thanking Hashem for all the things He gives us. And where is the bakasha? Where is it that we ask Hashem for something? All the way in the end of the brachas we say in the morning, we say, Yehi Ratzon. After we say, Hamarich HaVlosheina, we say, Yehi Ratzon, where we ask Hashem for all sorts of things. So in the brachas of Berachas HaShachar cover all these three aspects, and that's why that's what he suggests is the best way to be yotzei the chiyuv min ha-Torah, the chiyuv of, according to the Rambam, that every woman has to daven, is to say these brachas, and this covers everything. But minimally, you should say some bracha right away in the morning, and with that, you're yotzei your chiyuv of davening min ha-Torah, according to the Rambam. And this is generally what is accepted amongst women. And we'll get to soon why that is. Now, there is another opinion, and that's the opinion of the Ramban. And the Ramban holds that there is no chiyuv to daven min ha-Torah at all. And the whole chiyuv to daven is a drabanan. And that being the case, when the Gemara says you need to daven, that women need to daven, it's referring to the same Durabanan chiyuv that everybody has, which is shacharis and mincha. So the same way a man has to daven shacharis and mincha, a woman has to daven shacharis and mincha as well. Because there is nothing else. That is the whole beginning and end of what davening is all about. So according to the Ramban, every woman is obligated to daven shacharis and mincha. Now, when we say shacharis and mincha, what that means is Shemana Esrei, nothing else. Not Sukkot Zimra, not Shema, not Birchas Kriya Shema, just Shemana Esrei. So the obligation, according to the Ramban, is that a woman is obligated to daven shacharis, Shemana Esrei, and mincha, Shemana Esrei. Now, the Mishnah Berurah brings this down, brings these two opinions down, and he says that many women rely on the Rambam, and they just daven one tefillah, one bakasha, or, one tefillah, and they're yaitzah with that, and that's it. But he says that most places can hold like the Ramban, and therefore it's proper for a woman to daven shacharis and mincha. Then he goes on to say that aside from shacharis and mincha, a woman should also say Shema, and if possible, she should say the three parashiyas of Kriya Shema, not just the first pasuk of Shema Yisrael, but she should say the whole Shema. And if at all possible, she should also say, continue on from there till Shemoneh Esrei, meaning you say Emes, the Yatsiv, and all that till Shemoneh Esrei, because then you'll be saying the bracha of Baruch HaShem Gal Yisrael, and that's the best way to daven, to say Gal Yisrael and then daven. That's called being Semach Ulu Tfila, and that's the right way to say Shemoneh Esrei. Now, we'll get to that in a minute about these other things. But minimally, the main obligation, according to the Mishnah Berurah, that every woman is obligated, is to daven shacharis and mincha, the Shemoneh Esrei. Not anything else, but the Shemoneh Esrei is the real obligation every woman has. So, again, according to the Rambam, a woman is yaitza with just davening any tefillah, any bakasha, and according to the Ramban, no, you have to daven two Shemoneh Esrei in order to be yaitze, in order to do what your obligation is. Now, we all know that very few women are able to do that. The women that are able to do that are either older women that don't have the family obligations that younger women do, or, the women that have taken on extra things upon themselves. That, it's not considered to be a typical thing for a woman to daven every day, especially not shacharis and mincha. And it's brought down in the Sefer that quotes a lot of things from the Chafetz Chaim, that the mother of, that the wife of the Chafetz Chaim then told her son, whose name was Aryeh Leib, the son of the Chafetz Chaim, that she never davened until all her children grew up. And she did this with her husband's, upon her husband's advice. Now, the Chafetz Chaim advised his own wife, who one would imagine was a big tzaddikus, but not to daven until her children grew up. And he explained that being that there is this opinion of the Rambam that doesn't obligate women at all to daven other than one bakasha a day, and a woman has many, many things that make it very difficult for her to daven. She has many things that disrupt her kavana. And he quoted many sources that when a person's kavana is disrupted, he is not obligated to daven. And even though men will have to daven even if they can't be mechavein for a special reason, but women, given the fact that it's not simple that women are obligated at all, and they have so many disruptions, and in addition to that, they have also shibutim, they have obligations, family obligations to take care of the children, to cook, to clean, whatever a woman's obligations in particular are. So in combination of all those things, women have, generally speaking, especially when the children are younger, do not daven regularly, at least. If they, if a woman is able to, of course, it's a beautiful thing to daven and to chaparayin, to catch the opportunity to daven and to daven Shemoneh Esrei, but it's not treated as a proper obligation, and that's most certainly the way the minhag has been and has always been. Now, that having been said, provided that a woman does have some time to daven, what order should it be done? So, like we said previously, the main obligation is to daven Shemoneh Esrei. That's the main thing. Nothing before, nothing after, just to get Shemoneh Esrei in, and that doesn't have to take so much time. If there is more time, so then the next thing to do is to say the first pasuk of Kriya Shema. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, Baruch Shem Kivay Luchut Ba'Elam Ba'ed, and that's it. If you can do those two things, that's also a beautiful thing to add on. And not because women are obligated in Kriya Shema, they are not, but simply because every person should be mekabel ol malchus shamayim. He should make some statement that he accepts HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the creator, as the one in charge. And that being the case, that's true even if all you're davening is mincha. So in other words, you didn't have a chance to daven shacharis. All you can daven is mincha. Before you start mincha, you should also try to say Shema Yisrael, Shem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, Baruch Shem. And that is because the same reason applies. A person should try to be mekabel al malchus shemayim at some point during the day. Now, after that, the next thing that should be done, if possible, is to say the full parshas of Kriyat Shema, Shema, V'ahavta, V'hayim Shemaya, and V'yemeh. After that, this is only relevant for shacharis, if possible, continue on from that point and say Emes V'yatzev until Gal Yisrael, because there's a very special inyan to be Semech Ge'ula L'tfilah, which means to daven after you've mentioned the fact, after you've made a bracha indicating that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us, that he was Goyal us. That is a very special chashiva, it's a very special importance when it comes to davening. So again, the order is, from an Esrei, it trumps everything. Secondly, Kriya Shema, the first pasuk, and Baruch Shem, and that's the whole day. And then the three parashiyas of Kriya Shema, and after that, Emes V'yatzev. And obviously after that, then there's Baruch Shamar, Ashrei and Yishtabach, and the rest of Brichas Kriya Shema, and so on and so forth. That's all, as much time as you have. You know, obviously, it's better to daven as much as you can. It is actually nice, and it's suggested to try to make Zman Tefillah. So if a person has some sort of a plan of davening, try to work it out that it should be within Zman Tefillah. In other words, don't wait for 20 minutes before Chatzos. If at all possible, try to schedule it that it's done before Zman Tefillah, even for women. Now, that having been said, most women aren't naive to try to be makbid on it, but a number of svarim, a number of paiskim do suggest that even women should try to make it within Zman Tefillah. As far as davening on Shabbos is concerned, it's interesting, and it seems that many women treat Shabbos as a special chiyuv, that even if they don't daven during the week, they do try to daven on Shabbos. And the reason given is interesting is because it says by Yontiv, and there is some mention, similar mention by Shabbos, the Torah says Mikra'i Kodesh. Yontiv is Mikra'i Kodesh, a convocation of holiness. So what does that mean? So Rashi explains that it means you should be Mekadesh Yontiv. How? Ksus Nekia, wear special clothing, with tefillah and davening. So part of the way that we make Yontiv and Shabbos as well special is through tefillah. And that's why women have taken on themselves to daven, a special obligation to daven on Shabbos more than during the week, but obviously the same thing applies, that it's not truly an obligation more than during the week, and if family obligations don't allow for it, taking care of children and so on and so forth, don't allow for davening, a woman is not obligated more than just some tefillah and bakasha in the morning. So I want to speak a little bit about the parsha. This parsha is parsha of Yigash, where Yosef finally reveals himself to his brothers. Yehuda comes in the beginning of the parsha and makes a whole appeal to Yosef that he should have mercy and he should free Binyamin because it's going to have such a negative effect on Yaakov Avinu, and take him instead, he's a much better slave. And then Yosef reveals himself. And then the rest of the story continues on, how they are so embarrassed, and he comforts them, and then they go down to Yaakov Avinu, and eventually Yaakov and his whole family go down to Mitzrayim. Now, the point where Yosef reveals himself to his brothers, all he says is, Ani Yosef, I am Yosef, Ha'ayda Avichai, is my father still alive? And Chazal say that this was a techacha, this was a rebuke. And they say, from here we can see how terrible and how awesome the rebuke that Hashem will give all of us when we come to stand judgment in front of Hashem. And it's very interesting because Yosef didn't tell them anything. He didn't give them a mussar shmooze. He didn't tell them, you shouldn't have done this, and you shouldn't have sold me, and you this and this and that. Even though one would think he had 22 years to prepare, and he probably did have a very long mussar shmooze to give. But all he said was, Ani Yosef. I'm Yosef. Is my father still alive? And Chazal say, this was the most terrible rebuke a person could imagine. And this was just an idea, an inkling of how difficult it'll be when we stand judgment in front of Hashem. So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz and other svarim explain that the concept of rebuke isn't a mussar shmooze. A concept of rebuke is when a person is given to understand that he's been living with a mistake. He's based his actions and the way he lives his life and the way he conducts himself on a certain notion, on a certain idea, on a certain value, certain ideal. And then after 10 years of living that way and doing many, many things based on that preconceived notion, all of a sudden it's made clear to him with a indisputable clarity that it was all a mistake. And that totally upends his whole life. That is rebuke. He says, when Yosef said, Ani Yosef, and they saw that their whole plan of destroying the dreams and reducing Yosef to a slave all had the opposite effect. And exactly what Yosef dreamt wasn't made up. It was 100% true, and exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted from him. At that moment, they saw that they were mistaken all along. They had thought they had justified selling Yosef. They had thought it was the right thing. They had pages and pages upon justification. We could probably fill up many shuls and bookcases full of svarim of the justifications that they had. They were tzaddikim. They were Bali Ruach HaKodesh. They were Nevi'im. And yet, in this one moment, it was all proven to be a mistake. The Beis HaLevi goes a step further and he says, Yosef said, Ha'oid Avichai, is my father still alive? And he explains what that meant was, he was telling them, you're so worried about Yaakov Avinu's health. You're so worried about what this pain of Binyamin not coming back will do to him. Why weren't you worried about that then? Why weren't you worried about that when you sold me? And this, he says, is the form of rebuke that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take to each of us. We'll say we didn't have time to do this mitzvah, we didn't have time to be Isaac and Gemel's Chassadim, we were too busy with other things to think about this person. We had such challenges, we can't be patient, we're too tired, we can't do mitzvahs, etc., etc. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take each one of those and he'll say, okay, you were too tired. Well, let's take a review of your life. You weren't too tired to do this, you weren't too tired to have fun doing that, you had patience to do this. Why didn't you have patience to do mitzvahs? Why wasn't that important to you? It's obviously not that you lacked the time. It was that it wasn't as important to you. And that also is such a tremendous rebuke. And there's a lot to think about on these two points. But I want to just take one other thing from this. And that is, you know, it's very easy for us to look at the whole story of Yosef and his brothers, like they say, Monday morning quarterbacks. And we see, in retrospect, the mistake and how Hashem was leading the whole thing all along, and et cetera, et cetera. But we want to learn from there, and we want to somehow learn, what can we do that this shouldn't happen to us? What can we do that we shouldn't make such a mistake and then have to regret our whole life and the way we lived our whole life based on this notion that we had, based on the justification that we made? What can we take from this story to teach us how to avoid that? And Reb Chaim Shmulevitz says a beautiful, beautiful thing. And this is a real, real Torah Hashkafa. And what he says is that the problem over here was that the Shvatim did something which was very questionable. They took their brother and they sold him as a slave. That's a very questionable thing to do. And very, very hard to understand, is that the right thing? And if were that to be held alone, that act to be judged for itself, very hard to explain that that's the right thing to do. So how then did they justify it? They employed a very familiar concept. They employed the end justifies the means. They said, Yosef can't become king. That will uproot Klal Yisrael. And like I said, the Sfarim explain the cheshbonos they had, the justification they had, etc., etc., etc. They had a whole list of reasons why the end product can't be that the dream should come true. And therefore, since that end is so important, even though this selling of Yosef as a slave seems very questionable, the end justifies the means. And that, he says, is where we're meant to take a lesson, that that's not something we can employ. And he says the reason is because we, as Yidden, understand we don't control the end. Not only that, we understand that our actions don't even bring about the end. The end happens all on its own. We do what we do, it's a hishtablus ba'alma, just trying to make something happen, and it doesn't even actually make the thing that we want happen. That's not even the cause. The cause is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does it. And anybody who thinks different, he says, is saying, I've done it on my own. I've made my money on my own. I've created everything on my own. He says this applies to Gashmius and this applies to Ruchnius as well. A person doesn't create, a person doesn't do, and he doesn't make things happen. All he needs to do is do what Hashem wants him to do. The end product is out of our hands. Even when it happens, he says it's just a schar, it's a reward HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us. The Chafetz Chaim used to say, he said this in Yiddish, a person doesn't come to the world, he says, nisht upton, nisht nachton, and nisht oifton, narton, which means a person doesn't come to this world not to make sure something gets accomplished, not to copy anybody else, and not to try to make something happen. All he is expected in this world is to do, meaning to do what Hashem commanded us to do. Everything outside of that, everything past that, what the accomplishments, what needs to get accomplished, what needs to happen, that's all beyond us. And that's not what Hashem even expects from us. Hashem does that part. And therefore, the concept of the end justifies the means is not something that can possibly be applied in Yiddishkeit. All justifications generally come from thinking that we need this to happen, so we have to do whatever is in our power to make it happen, even if it's really questionable. That can cause people to do things that they wouldn't do otherwise. That can cause us to go to places where we don't belong, thinking that we can either make a Kiddush Hashem, we can do this, we can do that, we can accomplish that thing or this thing, be friends or hang around people we shouldn't be hanging around. It can cause us to say Lashon Hara with all sorts of justifications of how important it is to teach people things, not to tell them this information. And it's all justified by we need that certain thing to be accomplished. And what Chaim Shalovitz is telling us is that there is where a person made a mistake. You can't justify what you're doing by the end. It needs to be justified by itself. It has to be something that's permitted to do, something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do in and of itself. Once we start making justifications based on the end product, then we're opening ourselves up for the risk that we'll live our life based on this assumption, and then all of a sudden we'll find out that, A, it didn't even accomplish what we wanted it to accomplish, and it was a mistake all along. And this is a lesson we can take from the Shvatim, even though obviously we don't understand and we can't begin to understand the cheshbonos and the justifications, and to us it wouldn't have even been a question if they would have explained it to us. But this is a lesson we're meant to take from this. We're meant to take from here that try as best as we can to do, but to only do as HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do, and not to justify and to do things which are questionable only because we need a certain tachlis, a certain end, a certain thing to be accomplished. Have a good Shabbos. Kol Tov.